I wanted to start the song with the line, "I adore you," and then go from there, see where it took me. It took me all kinds of fun places. I mentioned sailing away to distant shores with you. This is something that we've gone on a couple of trips, you know.
That's James DiGirolamo. I'm Jamie Green. And this is Trading Fours. Hey everybody, welcome back to another edition of Trading Fours. I'm your host, Jamie Green. And today we've got the Nashville singer-songwriter James DiGirolamo in the house. James has got a brand new EP coming out this week called Paper Boats, and we're going to talk about that. But before we get started, just a little bit of housekeeping. Once again, I have joined the world of Patreon, and I have made it so cheap, people. It's a dollar. You lose more money when you get in your car or in your couch and change falling out under the cushions. For a buck a month, you can be a Patreon member and you can watch all these interviews that I do on video. So whether it's, I don't know, you want to do James's, it's going to be up there. You want to do Jason Wagner, it's up there. I'm going to put it all up there. And then also a rough transcript. So that's down in the show notes how you can do that. But let's get started with what the real reason I do this podcast, and that's for the artist. And James DiGirolamo has been a side person, side man, what would you like to call him? You know, somebody who plays with bands but isn't usually the person out in the forefront. But he has made that change and is in the forefront on his new EP called Paper Boats, which you're listening to one of the tracks right now. And he's great. And a lot of his influences, whether it's Paul Simon or the Beatles or Joni Mitchell, Stevie Wonder, Elvis Costello, Harry Nielsen, they're all great. And so we had so much to talk about, including XTC. We'll get into that. But James is a really good guy, really fun chat, really dug the EP. So let's get started. Here's my conversation with James DiGirolamo. Well, James, thanks so much for being on Trading Fours. I ask pretty much everybody this because, you know, I know the world's starting to open up.
Yeah.
But it's been a tough time for musicians for a while now. How are you doing?
That's a good question. I'm hanging in there like everybody, hopefully like everybody else. You know, it's been a challenging mental landscape, to say the least. I'm doing okay. I was in a decent position when this thing struck. I had a little bit of savings. Not everybody had that. That's a big part of, if you were struggling, this made that infinitely harder. And right. I've done quite a bit of struggling in my life too. So I'm happy that element was not a part of this. Not like I'm floating on, you know, like bags of money. Can you float on a bag that's full of heavy?
I'd like to find out.
I think if it's money, maybe it could be described as floating on it.
Right.
But okay. In any case, or maybe if you're at sea, money floats, right? Anyways, I digress. I'm hanging in there. It's been tough.
Yeah. And I think that's true of everybody. And, you know, it's been funny talking to all these musicians around. I think you're like the seventh person out of Nashville, which has been great. I mean, Nashville's such a great music town.
Yeah.
I had Maya Sharp on, was the last Nashville person. I don't know if you know Maya at all. And it's just interesting now, like, what are you going to do in 2021 now that the world, are you looking at bookings or what's the roadmap?
Yeah, I am. I'm hanging on for a minute, but then yes, I was gearing up to start working on my own stuff in earnest, you know, like playing shows and all that kind of stuff right when the pandemic came. Like I just had a guitar worked on. I just had a new pickup put in. I was really excited to start doing this. I've played with other folks, but I took a long, long hiatus from doing my own stuff. I had recorded a bunch of my own stuff, but I hadn't been playing shows.
Right.
And gearing up for that, just perfect perfect timing, or perfectly awful timing. So yeah, I can't wait.
Yeah, I think John Lennon's thing about life's what happens when you make other plans, right? I
mean, never has that been truer.
Right.
I mean, I have, and then there's, yeah, an infinite number of things this year that just felt like a slap down, but that's okay. That happens.
Well, you're on here because you have a new album out, Paper Boats, and I got to listen to it. Really, it's very lovely. It's lovely.
Oh, thank you.
There's something and I started out on piano and then I moved over to guitar. Mm-hmm. A couple of and it runs the gamut. I mean, the first track is very funky and, you know, like you said, I know you said in the notes, it's got a little bit of a McCartney, got a little bit of a Stevie Wonder to it.
Yeah.
But other tunes just have that haunting, like, it's that feeling of that late night guy sits down or a woman sits down to the piano, right? And just plays and the natural acoustics and just kind of that vibe on some of this. It's mm-hmm. such a beautiful thing. And one of the things I want to talk to, because I'm in Kansas City.
Oh, yeah. Great town.
Yeah. And in your song, The Girl Who Has Everything, you talked a little bit about Burt Bacharach. I don't know if you know this. Burt Bacharach was born in Kansas City, Missouri.
Yeah.
Although he moved to New York. Talk to me a little bit about this track. And then I know that the gentleman that you co-wrote it with, he actually went on and worked with Burt. So let's talk about the genesis of this.
Okay. That is the oldest track on the record. By far. That's we wrote that 19 years ago. I was in a band the guy's name we're talking about is Daniel Tashin.
Right.
He's an excellent songwriter, great singer, and now he's a great producer as well. We were pals and we were in a band and we wrote this tune and I was consciously going after that kind of territory that Burt treads, you know. It's a song I've taken a number of stabs at over the years to try to record it because I've always loved the song and I just haven't been able to quite pin it down until now. I hope I've finally done it, I guess.
That's great. It's a really cool tune.
Thank you. And then it's just kind of like cosmically funny to me that Daniel's path has led him to many things, but also to actually work with Burt, which I can't quite fathom.
Right.
I'm also not surprised in the least, you know?
Right. It's just interesting because, you know, Burt Bacharach, I mean, he's 1928 was the year that was the year that my dad was born. And you think about music and how much it's changed but all the great people he got to work with and
he stayed himself and he stayed relevant. It's amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing. That's
it. Not that many people that are able to traverse such a huge span of time and still, I mean, he's doing his thing. It's like there's quite a bit of diversity in that thing, but it's almost like Robert Redford.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's always Robert Redford. It's not like he's not a shapeshifter or something like that, but he's able to somehow make you really believe the character, but you're also always conscious there's Robert Redford. And it's sort of like Burt has there's some sort of analogy to that there. It's not like Burt suddenly had a punk band or, you know what I mean? There are some people who are really shapeshift like crazily. So, and he's not one of them. He's doing his thing.
No. And that's something that, is to be admired, right? I mean, that tenacity that you're just going to do you, right.
It takes quite a bit of skill. I mean, I've there are people like Tony Bennett that's a bit different. But he's clearly made an effort to stay engaged and mm-hmm. to stay relevant. And I mean, it's a legend that helps you do that. If you're also, you know, have all the if you have the will, I guess, to do it, you know, and have all these other vocalists and other musicians who would just fall over themselves to get to do a duet with Tony Bennett, for example, you know?
Yeah, I don't know about you, but if Tony called me, I'd be like, yeah. Mm-hmm. Although it'd be intimidating with that voice, but yeah, right?
I will. Yeah, it would be intimidating to say the least. It would be intimidating. And of course, you know, but my sense of folks like that too, is like the intimidation is probably like totally like that feeling is probably completely unnecessary. Cause I bet you anything, he'd be like, it's cool. You at ease, like in 2 minutes. There are many stories of like that, you know, in film and music where it's like, oh my God, I'm going to be working. I have a scene with the, and then like in 5 seconds, you're like, oh, this is going to be fine. Like they're just people. They're just a person.
So who was that with just you, like, James? Cause I know you've done a lot of session work. So you work with somebody, you're just like a little gabs, you know, gobstruck and just.
Not. No? I haven't worked with anybody that I felt quite that way about. I mean, there's a lot of people that their talent is astounding, but many of them, I don't know. That's a really good question. I do remember feeling a little kind of, you know, I hate the word starstruck because it just, but I did feel a little bit that way. I was doing a tour with Holly Williams, and we were opening for Billy Bob Thornton's band, and then they were opening for Willie Nelson. Mm-hmm. And so at first I was like, holy mackerel, that's Billy Bob Thornton. I was a big fan, you know, too, before I was kind of like around the guy for a minute. But then, you know, I don't know. He's just a dude. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, he's an extraordinary dude, but he's still a dude, you know, it's just like, I don't know.
No, I totally get it.
That's really weird psychological territory, the starstruck thing.
It, you know, I had Jason Faulkner on not long ago, who's a fabulous musician himself.
He's incredible.
And we talked about Paul McCartney. He got to record McCartney.
Yeah, now that would make me like, I would think, okay, yeah, I'm this isn't real. I'm dreaming this.
Right. And that's what would happen. And to the credit of Paul McCartney, because I said, you know, he said he was just disarming and could not have been nicer and just relaxed and just a cool guy and just, you know.
He's used to having people absolutely flip their lid to when they meet him.
Yeah. But it's nice to hear that he doesn't have an attitude and he doesn't come on and be like, hey,
yeah,
not me, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, he didn't have to do that. That's cool. So I want to back up a little bit because
I got way off of the song.
No, it's fun. That's why I call it trading fours, James. It's the idea we're just having a casual conversation.
I do that too, man. I go on tangents. That's my wheelhouse.
Well, I just feel like it's a way to get to know people and not, you know, I don't have preformed questions. I'm not going to ask you something stupid like, what was the worst gig you had? I don't really care. Yeah. I just think that's, you know, that's not me. But I do want to talk about your upbringing a little bit because I read and all the stuff that Wendy sent me and Wendy's awesome.
Yeah.
That you really wanted to do movie scores originally. And some of the people, I mean, Bernard Herrmann, I mean, he was like the Hitchcock guy, right? I mean, these and the other guy, who was it? Ennio, what was his last name?
Yeah, Morricone. Yeah.
All like, was it Fistful of Dollars and all that? Like, those spaghetti westerns. Scores.
Yeah,
right?
And also take a listen to his score for The Mission or for Days of Heaven. They are just, it's magic. It's like, I don't know how to describe his music so well.
I've never really talked to anybody about this. A little bit with Hadrian Farrar, because Hadrian Farrar said that's what he wants to get into, the jazz bassist. That's why he went to LA, because he really wants to do movie scores. But so are you a kid, James, in the theater and this music moves you? What made you say, hey, this is cool and I want to do that?
Gosh, great question. I'm not sure where that took off from. I'm not sure where that came from quite. That's funny too. And that's also typical of me. I'm just like, I don't always understand why I think things. And so Bernard Herrmann, his stuff, it's like he wrote the score for Citizen Kane. And then his last score was for Taxi Driver. And then he had all the Hitchcock stuff and a million things in between. And I don't know. There was just something about music of that kind, movie scores. I guess probably if I really think hard about this, the genesis is probably going to be John Williams. It's probably going to be me as a kid seeing Star Wars and Indiana Jones and those kinds of things. That's probably the connection. And John Williams, he's incredible.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of that stuff is like now it's you know, it's gone through, it's been imitated. He was imitating Gustav Holst quite a bit in the all the space movie stuff.
Yep.
A lot of the same sounds, a lot of the same chords, a lot of the same types of orchestration and all that kind of jazz. And anyway, that's probably where I got hooked on that sort of thing. I was always interested in instrumental music, and movies are so powerful. I wasn't aiming at becoming a classical composer or somebody like that. I thought, of course, in my folly, that I would become a film composer. Now, at the time that I was coming up, it was all about synthesized sounds, and it was all about emulating sounds digitally.
Okay? Oh yeah.
And that actually is part of what served to blow that dream up, or make that dream inaccessible. That's a better way of looking at it. Because even though I went to music school, I had no earthly idea what it really takes to work in that world. I just didn't know anything about it. I'm a very late bloomer, me. I was a really dreamy kid. I really didn't understand a whole lot about how the world worked. I mean, really bad. Like a lot of people say that, but I was really, really clueless. I'm not like being falsely modest. My head was inside out.
Did you grow up in Nashville?
Till my 30s. You know what I mean?
Right. Did you grow up in Nashville, or are you from somewhere else? Where'd you grow up?
Yeah, I'm from outside of Philadelphia.
Okay.
And we moved. My dad was in television. We moved to from Pennsylvania to New Jersey. He was working in New York City, and he tried to get a little closer to the city. We moved to New Jersey. We moved to Virginia Beach.
Closer to the city, bud.
He went to work for Crazy Pat Robertson.
Oh my gosh.
That's what brought us to Virginia Beach. Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
And then I went to school in Nashville at Belmont, which was formerly associated with the Southern Baptist Convention. So that was a Christian school as well. And then I moved to New York myself, and I, you know, opened my mind up and, you know, to a degree, not far enough.
That's funny. So when did you get, and I would love to talk about the Pat Robertson thing, but
yeah, we can come back.
I want to talk about you more. So when you so how old were you when you moved to New York?
I was 19 or, I was 20.
And what year would this have been? Like what era?
It would have been 1990.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this is back before New York got cleaned up. So it was still.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Although it started to get cleaned up. Now, I traveled into New York many times as a child when it was really, really not cleaned up.
And, oh, yeah.
I moved to New York, and it was during when Mayor Dinkins was still there. And then Giuliani came in while I was there.
Okay.
And we don't want to get started on him.
No.
Not right now. Talk about tangents, you know.
Oh my goodness. No, it's interesting. Only thing I'll say about that, to go from, I mean, he was really known at one point. I mean, he was very well.
He was respected once.
You know, he was really known as a prosecutor that had really cleaned up, you know, you can't completely clean up the mafia, but he really had gone after the mafia, and he was America's mayor. And yeah. And then where we are now is the thing.
Just goes to show you how events and how the machinery of public opinion and all of that stuff, it's like, man,
yeah,
it's powerful stuff.
Yeah, it is. So that's such an interesting era though for New York, and I can just tell you from my own personal experience that, you know, I was in Austin in the early 90s, so it was always this yin and yin, you know, this back and forth of, hey, that's a cool band, but do I have the money to see them, right, kind of thing. Right. Did you have that problem too? Like, you're like, man, I'd like to go to that show, but I can't afford it, right?
Oh, sure. Yeah. And if I can sort of start to tie things in, not to tie it up in a neat bow or anything, but, you know, yes, when I lived in New York, I remember eating a can of corn for dinner one time. I mean, that was a hard place to struggle. And I got a little bit of music on TV, but it was work made for hire, you know, and it was all canned instruments, you know, that I played everything, you know, via keyboard and sampler and all that kind of jazz, and a sequencer. And, you know, I was delighted though. I was making money making music. That was great. But I was also killing myself in restaurants at the same time. And, And so there's really no excuse for me having to eat a can of corn, is there? Because I was, you know, if I had, yeah. So, but I was a mess, you know, I'm just, you know, there's no sense of trying to varnish over that. But also while I was there, I kind of started to realize the reality of how tough it was going to be to do any kind of post-scoring thing as a, in New York, with what I had going on at the time. And I actually just retreated to Nashville. I knew people. It was an easy place to live at the time. It's not like now. Now it's gotten,
no, it's crazy now.
It's gotten expensive now. It's nuts. Yeah.
Well, that's what always happens. These towns, like, everybody discovers it, and what made it cool and fun in the first place kind of goes away, right?
Yeah. The one thing that's cool is they discovered coffee, thank God.
Right.
But it got harder to live in Nashville, but it took a long, long time for that to happen. I actually live in a northern suburb of Nashville. I'm up in Hendersonville, which is great. It's really great. And at first I felt, oh, I wish I was right in the heart of things. And now I'm like, so glad I'm not in the heart of things. But Nashville is really an easy place to live. It was nothing like struggling in New York. My friends were there, like I said, or some of my people were still there, and I knew my way around, and I found a place to live with some buddies. And it was, I think our rent was $150 a person. That was great. You know?
Yeah.
So I started getting in bands and stuff. I didn't know that was going to happen. It's all by accident, you know? So I just kind of let the scoring thing just kind of went by the wayside, and I started to be in bands. I started to play music, and I started to write songs, and my first tries at that were, you know, they were what you'd expect. They were just callow and, you know, nothing sounded good, you know?
Well, they call it a craft for a reason, right? Songwriting is a craft that you, like woodworking or something, you develop it over time. And
yeah,
I think most early songs from every songwriter that I've talked to, and I knew I couldn't write songs, so I never even tried, but it's a process, and that they'll tell you the stuff of the early was terrible, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's few people that come out. I mean, you look at the Beatles, they were kids when their first stuff wasn't maybe super hot like that, but before the stuff that started to come out, you know, like, you know, George Martin, when he was going through their early stuff coming out, he wasn't super impressed, you know?
No.
Anyways, I mean, look at how quickly they developed. I mean, it's astonishing to me that they were so together at such a young age. Their talent really was developing really quickly. I'm nothing like that. I was clueless. The age that they broke up, I was just, I feel like I was still being tucked in by my grandmother, you know?
Oh, my goodness. Well, anyway. No, that's funny, though. The Beatles, though, are such the anomaly. I mean, and it's kind of this perfect concoction of a million things. I mean, you think just the fact, I think the competitiveness of McCartney and Lennon.
Yeah,
that's right. Where they're trying to outdo each other, and then you put, like you said, George Martin doesn't get enough credit. I mean,
no,
what he did in the studio and brought in. And anyway, it's just
maybe for his biggest single decision, which was to not have there be a lead singer.
Right. Which was fabulous.
That's essential. And really, that's absolutely essential.
Well, you know, I think we're pretty close in age, because a lot of your people that you named that you were influenced and you love.
Yeah. Yeah.
A lot of the same people I love.
Like who?
Well, obviously Elvis Costello. I mean, you could talk about Harry Nilsson and some of the stuff that Harry Nilsson did. XTC.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fearless. Fearless songwriting. And Andy Partridge. I don't know how you write some of the songs that he wrote. I mean, maybe now I've come out of my, I'm 51 years old.
I'm 53. I told you we're close in age, right?
Yeah. So. Yeah. I think, you know, if you listen to a song like Pink Thing, I mean, that's bold. Mm-hmm. That's a guy who is comfortable with himself. Well, he might be very uncomfortable with himself, but he's comfortable with letting out whatever it is he wants to sing about, whatever song subject, you know, from, you look at Dear God, or, you know, Dear God seems almost quaint now, but it knocked me over when I first heard it, because I was still somewhat in the bubble of my, I don't want to get too deeply into the whole religious thing, because I don't want to like, but I suffice to say, I kind of got away from that. And I I feel better.
I was raised Catholic, so you know.
Yeah, there
just,
you go.
They just pile the guilt. Are you Catholic too? With your last name?
Well, that's funny. My parents are both Brooklyn Italian Catholics,
right?
And then, but we moved down to Virginia Beach, or actually, we moved. They moved to Pennsylvania, and they converted sort of to Lutheranism, which is strange. And then, and then down to Virginia to a more what's the word for it? Evangelical. I guess, which I could do a half an hour on that. I could do more than that, but
That's funny though, because my entire childhood I sat at mass thinking of all the places I'd rather be.
And now it's like I have a profane way of saying that preference. It's like I hate me some blankety blank church is what I think in my head. Like, I don't want to, that's the last place I want to be.
Oh yeah.
Truly. Like, I'm not just, it's like really and truly not the place I want to be.
Yeah.
I just don't think that's where the answers are.
No. And I, you know, and then this is fun. We are having fun tangents, but they're fun.
Yeah. Don't let me get too far off.
No, I got it. We're going to get back to your record. Cause get why we're doing this, but I'm always, when people have good conversations, I'm always interested.
I'm happy that you're open to all that.
Oh, absolutely. It's supposed to be fun. No,
it's like an outside jazz conversation.
Exactly.
We're nowhere in the form of the tune right now. We're not. Yeah. Exactly.
But we're going to blow everybody's mind at the last 30 seconds of the song.
There's a lot of whole tone scales happening right now.
Yeah. No, I was just saying, you know, I had one of the people I've had on, who's one of the best singers here in town, is this woman named Paula Saunders. And she's African-American, and she grew up in that church. And I told her, I was like,
yeah,
I was really jealous because at least you guys got to sing and have fun. And I said, you know, the only person who sang in my church was the priest, and he was tone deaf. And it was
painful,
you know, just like somebody's putting a poker in my ear because the guy couldn't find a key if you handed it to him. So anyway.
Do you know what? You just reminded me. And so you just actually maybe revealed something that I haven't thought about. And I'm not at all surprised that I haven't thought about it. But I think some of my interest in, because my experience with church music was different from yours. Mine was the Catholic thing. There was pipe organ music. There was Bach. It was beautiful. It was well done. It was played well. That was the one thing that I
liked.
Adored. And it's all, incidentally, it's the one thing that went away when we left those Northern churches, even the Lutheran, same deal. When we got down to Virginia, it was a band in church, and it didn't belong. Frankly, I just don't think that belongs. Again, you know, people are entitled to their views on that, but I didn't like it. I liked the reverence of at the time. I still adore the music, regardless of whether it had a religious. The patrons of classical music at the time were, of course, you know, the powers that were, which was the church. So as you know. And anyway, that might be the earliest place that my interest in film scoring that was my own thing that I layered on top of that. But yeah, instrumental music, that's probably where that comes from.
And then, were your parents musical, James, or was it just you?
My dad. Yeah. My mom is not musical, to put it.
Neither is mine. So that's
put
okay.
It politely. My mom likes music, but my mom's not musical.
Right.
My mom's a lovely person, but not musical. And my dad, my late father was in bands in like a long time ago. He left that. He had one song that came out on Amy Records by a guy, the singer, who's a lovely guy. His stage name was Russ Vestee. and it was, gosh, can I dredge the name of the song up? It was like something like, I don't want to get this wrong. It's something like Midnight Mary or something. I can't remember. That's probably not the right title, but in any case, and I've heard it, and it's very charming and funny and cool. But to say that my dad was quote unquote musical, I don't know, but he's responsible for playing lots of Paul Simon records and, you know, all the stuff that I grew up hearing, all the 70s singer songwriter stuff that is, you know, has that I've absorbed.
Right.
You
know? Yeah. No. And you can hear a lot of this in this new album and you know, it's interesting. I always love, just when you get kind of that little ear candy of different types of tunes, like I said, the first mm-hmm. tune's pretty funky.
Yeah.
There's a fair amount of love songs in here. Mm-hmm. At least two of the tracks I remember are waltzes.
Yeah.
Let's talk about waltzes because I think it's interesting. The waltz, a lot of times, kind of has like a love component to itself, right? I mean, there's just kind of like a lot of waltzes or love songs.
Let me try to answer that. So, because it gets into to other places too. But I never sit down and go, I will write something now in three or a couple of them are, it's more like it's 6/8 maybe, but it still feels like a waltz. It doesn't matter. You can count it both ways. There's no intention to write. I don't think about that. I don't think like, oh, I really shouldn't write two things that are in three or six because that's weird. You know, I just don't give myself rules like that because I think they get in the way. It could easily be that you give yourself a challenge. I'm going to do something this way or that way or the other way. But that really isn't that's not what my process is. My process is I sit down and I tinker around and I follow the idea or an idea. And sometimes words come, sometimes words don't. At the best times, things kind of happen together and they shape one another. And then all that kind of stuff about the time or all that stuff is just, I don't want to say it's not because it's not luck. It's just not intentional. It's just, I'm not analyzing it while I'm doing it, I think is the key. There's plenty of examples where I like skip a beat or add two bars or two beats or just to service the melody or to just go with the energy. Mm-hmm. I do not think about, oh, well, I need to have a verse and then that needs to go to the chorus. And then we have to write a bridge there. And where's this, you know, I just don't think about it that way. I like writing unusual forms. I like having things that are five bars instead of eight bars. I don't like the whole thing of here's an eight bar phrase. We have to repeat it twice. Right. And there's another eight bar phrase. And it happens once or twice. I like doing things three times. I like doing things, you know, I like it to be a little bit unexpected. I realize that you have to give people enough to hang on to. You can't just be obscure or weird or jarring or angular for the sake of doing those things. I mean, sometimes there's great angular music, like some of that XTC, like on Black Sea, it's angular, but it's, or like old Genesis or something, but it's not just being angular. I don't know, man. It's maybe it is. I am not looking to do that. I'm looking to just kind of follow the feeling. And if it's in three, it's in three. If it's in whatever, you know, I realize that stuff oftentimes after the fact, like, oh, it's in, right. It's the most obvious glaring thing about the song. And I realize it the last, you know,
that's funny.
No, yeah, it happens that way. It's weird.
So, when you write, so let's talk about your tune Sail Away, because that was one of the ones that and it kind of caught me. I'm a guitar player, so obviously the guitar catches me. And you're playing guitar on this too, right? You're not just keyboard, right? So
Sail Away, I played everything.
So let's break this down. So was this are you mostly a piano guy? Do you always write on piano, or is there sometimes the guitar is your muse? Like how? So with this tune, which one was it?
I wrote this on guitar. That often happens that for a while, for for a long while, I felt too much pressure on the piano that I should write things. Too oftentimes you get caught up in trying to write the accompaniment while you're writing the tune. And on the guitar, you can strummy, strummy, strum.
Right.
It's easier for me. I mean, maybe someone who grew up on the guitar would have the same problem and they would like to switch to the piano, something they know less, something they're less at home on. And because they're less at home on it, it frees them to let go of the feeling I have to be good at this and just strum me, strum me, strum in my case. That's what I did. And then I can learn to finger pick the thing or play a part when it's time to record the song. But in this instance, I wrote it on the guitar. I'm not guitarist enough to play in all keys with facility. So I use a capo and right. I try to put as many interesting chords in range. I mean, I don't think about that ahead of time, but you know, it so happens this song gets around a little bit chord wise, but it's all stuff that's readily available. Like most of the chords are on open strings. There's a few exceptions, but yeah. So I don't know. I'm all about facilitating my writing, and I can go on.
No, that's why we're here, man.
So that song is written for my girlfriend, who is a huge Air Supply fan.
Okay.
And they have a song that has the line, "I adore you." It's a, you know, it's her, one of her favorite songs. I'm not a huge fan, and that's okay.
It was just around when we grew up. It was constantly around. They were huge. People forget that. They were huge.
Massive. Yeah. So my girlfriend just loves them. And so anyway, I wrote her this song. I think it was for Valentine's Day. It was our first or second Valentine's Day. And I wrote this tune, and I guess I did kind of give myself a little challenge to contradict myself immediately, as I often do. I wanted to start the song with the line, "I adore you," and then go from there, see where it took me. And it took me all kinds of fun places. You know, I mentioned sailing away to distant shores with you. This is something that we've gone on a couple of trips, you know. There's a fantasy about riding bicycles around the Renaissance walls or the ramparts of this little Italian town called Lucca that we have not yet been to. So that's
I was going to ask you that. Have you
we
seen
haven't
it?
Haven't been. I've seen it on, you know, travel shows.
Okay.
I can't wait to actually do it because it's like a 3 mile or so loop that is wide. And you can just ride your bicycle. It seems to be the most charming possible way to spend an afternoon.
You got to do it now, dude.
Got to do it.
I mean, yeah. That's interesting you say that. I watch music documentaries all the time.
Yeah.
And the Gordon Lightfoot one's out. I don't know if you've seen that. And Gordon Lightfoot wrote a bazillion tunes.
Yeah.
And so one of his songs, and apparently in Canada, it's just like the Canadians love it because it's all about in the winter in Canada and, you know, the beauty of the winter and the coldness. And apparently he wrote it in a hotel room in Cleveland, Ohio. Like he was, right. Same kind of thing. He wasn't out in the woods doing it. He was and I guess that's part of the creative process, right? James, you're trying to take yourself away.
Create. That's my favorite. That is the single most important thing about it to me. That's the single most important thing about any artwork of any kind is just the sheer creative force and getting in touch with that. I'll give you a fantastic example. Is one of my favorite books is Henderson the Rain King by Saul Bellow, and a lot of Bellow's books take place in Chicago. This one takes place mostly in Africa, a continent he never traveled to in his life, and he has made this very dreamlike place and it populated it with all these like a whole array of really interesting and deep characters and Henderson himself. And I can go on and on forever about that, but the fact that the man never went there is astounding to me. Just the guts that it takes to make that decision. I'm going to write about a place I've never, that's that's something to pay attention to, because you might have that thought like, I can't do that.
Right.
But maybe you can, you know, if your talent will let you go there, you know.
I was just going
to
say,
he had talent just seemingly to spare, and he made that book look effortless, which it's couldn't have been, but.
Right. So my $1 million question for you is, how did the girlfriend receive this tune?
Oh yeah. Thankfully, it's really funny. Thankfully she loves it. It's very fortunate that she likes my music. It happened at an early juncture in our relationship. I handed her the Lullaby of Black Sheep, which is the record I put out before this. And, you know, not that many people have heard that record. It's just, I would love to get it, you know, out there more. It's just, it's a hard thing to do. So, but she listened to it and she liked it, and she didn't just like it. She thought, there's a guy with the emotional depth that this is not a made up story. It was because of the record that she decided that I was somebody that was substantial enough that she could love. Maturity and the depth and the self-awareness that she was someone, I was someone that she could be serious about, which makes me laugh and makes me so happy. The fact that it hasn't been heard by a lot of people, but it got heard by like one person who it matters so much that happened. So anyway, that's, if I wrote that whole record just for her, that's okay.
No, I mean, I think that's the creative process. You want to have a muse, right?
Yeah.
You know, something that's moving you musically, or as you said, if you're writing fiction or whatever it is. So,
yeah.
Well, I really have enjoyed listening to this album. I want people to listen to it too. And I always ask James, what's like people who are hearing you, we're in Kansas City. Strange. Most of my listeners are in Kansas City, but I have this weird core group in India that listens to me, which I still haven't figured out why.
Oh, I love it.
Every episode, there'll be people from India that are downloading these. So
that's the internet at its best.
Yeah. So I'm always, and I've actually asked a couple times, like, hey, let me know why and how you found me. And nobody's ever responded. I would love to know why. So if people are hearing you for the first time and say, you know, this guy, I'm intrigued. I want to hear this. I want to know more. Yeah. What's the best way to follow you?
Gosh. Yeah. I mean, go to jamesdgirolamo.com. There will be, and this, of course, the spelling there is fun. I haven't contemplated that much. you might type in paper boats, you know, and search that way. But anyway, yeah, my website's got all the links out to every place you want to go.
Well, that's great. And this is going to go live on June 5th.
Right.
So right before it opens, right?
Comes out. The album comes out on the 11th of June. Yeah. And I'm very excited about that. I hope some of your listeners will check it out.
Oh, absolutely. And then, so James, what are you going to be doing like 3-4 months from now? What's your plan?
That's a great question. I don't know. I hope to be playing some shows.
And where do you like to play in Nashville? Do you have places you just like to play?
Well, it's all changed so much. So I'm going to approach that from a different angle, I think. I don't think I'm going to try to go back to the places that I used to play and start there. I think I'm going to start here in Hendersonville, actually.
Okay.
And start real light and then start to work my way into town and just start running laps, so to speak. Just get stronger and... you know, more relaxed and so forth, and start to know the material inside and out. And I just really want to enjoy that process. That's my goal, instead of being nervous about it or, you know, or any of that, or anxious, I guess, about it. Like, oh, I hope enough, you know, I just don't want to start to place all these expectations on it. That's gotten me in trouble in the past.
And is that just a completely different dynamic, being the front person as opposed to the side person? Is that just something that...
Infinitely different.
Right.
Infinitely different. you know, it comes with all the responsibility, but it also, if you want to add a bar here or there, you know, it's, you can do it. And it's just, there you go. Especially if you're, this is you. I think it's first, I'm going to just do these gigs by myself. I don't.
Makes sense.
I would love to put a band together, but that comes with scheduling and money and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. And money, gosh, money is such a big part of this that, you know, it doesn't, does it get talked about that much? I don't know. It's like just to put something together.
Oh my
like,
God. Yes.
Just to have the equipment at home to put something decent together, which more people can do now than ever, of course, by orders of magnitude, but to be able to get your stuff recorded, get it mixed, get it mastered, and then manufacture it, or, you know, just all the time, everything's on the artist now, absolutely everything, the expense and all of the stuff you have to learn to be expert at. It's staggering. It's potentially overwhelming.
It's exhausting.
It can be exhausting, because also you're trying to do all the other stuff you're trying to do in life. There's more to it than just that. So you can go into this total, you know, just wormhole about it that can take up all of your time. So it's very important to make time for other stuff. Like I go for an evening run every night. I stop working. It's like, it's time for my run. I don't say I haven't finished what I'm supposed to. It's not negotiable. It's, I gotta go, you know?
Do you listen to music or is it time to clear your head out?
Yeah. No, then it's time to the music is the birds and the trees at that point.
It's interesting.
It really is. And your foot falls, you know, yeah. The music.
So I literally, that's why I'm wearing this running shirt. I'm usually, I don't usually look like a slob.
I can't see
University of Nebraska. It's where I went to undergrad.
I had one of my bitterest, worst and best runs in Lincoln, Nebraska.
That's my hometown, dude.
Okay. All right. So I was running along. I don't know how to describe. There's that bridge right by downtown. And then there's kind of a trench, a deep trench that you can run.
That's Salt Creek. Yeah, Salt Creek. Yeah.
We thought if we got down in there, we could maybe be spared the worst of the wind and the rain. That was just, it was probably... It was below 40 degrees. And that's like the worst. That's like, I'll take snow before I'll take a cold, hard rain.
Right.
This was just a cold, hard rain with lots of wind. It was like the worst. But I'll never forget it. We did it. And, you know, it's an experience. Anyway, so Lincoln, Nebraska.
No, it's funny because I ran the Lincoln Half Marathon
in
2013.
That was the year of my first half marathon.
Okay, great. And it was funny because I was like, oh, this is gonna be so great. It's, you know, because Lincoln's flat as a pan. If for people who haven't been to Lincoln, Nebraska, it's very flat.
Yeah.
Kansas City, we've got the river bluffs and stuff. Kansas City is pretty hilly, but Lincoln's flat. So as a runner, you're like, oh, this would be great.
Yeah.
And it's the first weekend in May. So I'm like, oh, the weather, you know, at least it won't be 100 and stuff. And James, I wake up, it's like maybe 35. And the wind always blows in Nebraska, but it's blowing straight out of the north.
Yep.
Freezing.
Yeah.
And it starts snowing.
Perfect.
And I was
at least you're not going to get overheated. This is
no.
You don't have to worry. That takes all of that out of the equation.
Yeah. And so like, I was like, oh, it's going to be so great. Cause you know, you start on campus. That's where I went to undergrad. I literally ran by the cathedral, the risen Christ, where I was bored all those days.
Perfect.
I went by my high school, my junior high school, my elementary school. It actually goes to the street that I grew up on. You go by that. My mom was down there and family members clapping for me. And that's it's fun. Like, you have this vision. It's going to be this perfect day. Right. And I froze my ass off.
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't live in Lincoln for the weather.
The source of all human suffering is your expectations.
Right.
And because they invariably get dashed. And so if you're putting all your hopes on having things turn out the way you expect, you know, you're going to just do a lot more suffering than you need. I've learned all of this the hard way. This
right.
Type of stuff that, yeah. So
that's very Buddhist of you. It's very Zen, right?
It actually is. Yeah. I know. And I'm an irreligious fellow, but that stuff has some, at least they're not trying to go through life with just half a world. Like, just no good stuff only. I don't want to, I don't want to hear. I plug in my ears, you know,
right.
And make noises. So I can't have the bad penetrate. You know, that seems to be where people are coming from sometimes, but the Buddhists, at least they acknowledge the bad. They acknowledge right. the whole thing. And I can get with that.
Absolutely.
That's the closest to religious thought that I get.
No, believe me, you're speaking my language. It's so nice to meet you.
Likewise.
I hope you, again, the EP is called Paper Boats. It's coming out on June 11th, which is right around the corner, and people check it out. And I hope you make it to Kansas City someday.
Yeah, I would love to play Kansas City. That'd be fantastic.
So nice to talk to you.
Likewise. Thank you.
All right. Man. Good luck. Good. Best of luck. I hope it goes well for you. Appreciate it. Always one more.
Sail away to distant shores with you. Rent a couple of bikes, ride the tops of the dikes with you. Sorry, what's that?
James DiGirolamo, everybody. This is the tune that he wrote for his girlfriend. How cool is it to have somebody write you a song? I mean, I would love that. I should probably write a song for my wife, but I suck at writing songs, so it's never happened. But is there anything more romantic than writing a song for somebody? I don't think so. So thanks so much to James. Yes, down in the show notes, you can see how to follow James in several different iterations. Please do that. And that's going to do it for this time on Trading Force. Hey, next time, though, I've got a band from Berkeley, California, The Jenny Thing, and they were a group that got together at Cal Berkeley in the late 80s, early 90s, put out some albums, life happened, took a break, but now they're back, and better than ever, and they've got a new album coming out, and they're so much fun. You're really going to dig this if you're a fan of that era. We had a great chat, so that's next time. So until then, go out and support live music, and I'll talk to you real soon. Bye-bye. Say